Hey, everybody, this is Phil Town.
And this is Danielle Town.
Welcome to the Invested Podcast. We are diving deep into Warren Buffett style investing for the last many years.
Oh, yes.
Which tells you that it's very, very simple, but not very, very easy. Now, I hate to say that, honestly, because I think it really is easy, but you have to overcome so many things that are going on with your desire to, you know, win big or your fear of losing everything.
Totally. Like
these two things get in the way so much. So we've been talking about a couple of the extremes here last time, kind of the bell curve of investing, which goes from really, really super conservative investing that Ben Graham did back in the 1930s, which may come back into vogue again, I guess, if we ever have a real big depression. And that is,
I found that really interesting to talk about the like changes over time periods of what kind of long-term investing works in different.
What constitutes a conservative bet, right?
Oh,
what
that's another way to put it.
Conservative investment. Yeah. So back in the Depression, the what people discovered over a relatively short period of time, right, from late 1929 to, I mean, really probably 1941 or so, 42, that you couldn't make money in the stock market. And there was like a generation of investors came into believing that you couldn't make money in the stock market. The only thing it was good for was dividends. And Ben Graham had an idea that you could make money in the stock market if you bought companies really cheaply. Hmm. So you had to come to understand something about them and you buy them really cheap. And of course, they were available really cheap because a lot of companies were going out of business. So that's what he called his system, the net-net system, where he was buying companies just for essentially the cash and a super discounted view of accounts receivable and a super discounted view of inventory, and then subtract everything that company owes. And then you buy it for about 80% of that. That would be a conservative deal.
I remember you asked me if I knew what net-net was, and I kind of like sort of thought I did. But what I was thinking of was like, definitely not that. I just thought it meant like an ultra cheap company of some sort.
You got that part right.
Yeah, I mean, that part was right. But the details, I think, are really interesting of exactly like how he broke down the money out and money in, and then whatever legit money you have at the end, buy it for less than that.
Now, if you really want to get into all this, Daniel, you can read Security Analysis by Ben Graham.
I was thinking
Dodd.
because I have like, I don't know.
I have it on my shelf.
I'm going to say I've like read through it. I'm not sure I digested.
Yeah, exactly.
Because it's a very dense book and I read it at the beginning of my investing practice. But as I've discovered through this whole thing, whatever I read at the beginning of investing practice, like when I first started, it's a completely different experience to read it now, 5 or 6 years in. Like, to the point where I basically didn't read it that first time for the effect that it would have. I mean, it had an effect at the time, but to come away from Security Analysis and not know what net nets are, like it's a really big part. It's a big takeaway that most people have from that book. And I definitely didn't take it away. So it's an interesting experience to realize how much there more is to know, how much more there is to know.
Well, some books you can sort of read quickly, you know.
Of course. That's
Security
not one of them.
Security Analysis is like reading calculus quickly. Yeah. It's not going to happen.
I mean, even The Intelligent Investor, which is much more readable, is still quite dense.
It is. Well, that is sort of one extreme of this sort of bell curve in investing. And when Warren Buffett first started, he was deeply into the net-net philosophy in middle 1950s. And then gradually it started to become clear that it is very, very difficult to find those kinds of bargains as the market started coming back from World War II and the economy started booming. And then Charlie Munger came along, as we said last time, and said, look, man, this is just so much better if we buy wonderful companies at a fair price than buying these cigar butts at a cheap price. let's buy wonderful businesses. And that really is became the future of Berkshire Hathaway. And it's fascinating reading to read Buffett's letters as he made this transition that took a number of years. I think Berkshire was kind of a net-net. It wasn't really a net-net, but it wasn't really a wonderful business either. It was kind of a crap business.
Yeah.
And the lessons he got there ultimately formed how he would be an investor in the future. But just take heart, you guys. I mean, this was a 15-year journey for Buffett, okay? And he's brilliant. I mean, from 1955 to about 1970, when things really got into focus and he really started implementing with a lot of money these ideas that we've been teaching you guys.
Well, so, and he wrote journey. In his letters that he deeply regretted how long it took him to mm-hmm. let go of that idea of sticking to the cigar butt strategy and to move towards the idea that there could be wonderful companies that you would pay more for. I thought that was quite surprising that he put that in one of his annual letters, how much he regretted not sort of breaking away from his teacher earlier. Well,
especially because he gives so much credit to Graham for laying down some of the fundamental rules. But in all fairness, you know, none of these guys did it by themselves. Graham had one thing that he figured out, and that is don't lose money when you invest. And this is how you do it. You buy net nets. So rule one comes from Graham. Also, the idea that you look at stocks as businesses come from Graham. So that's those are really unique points of view from the first hedge fund manager. And then mm-hmm. Buffett, of course, takes it from there. But, and that is the center of our sort of investing world, is buying wonderful businesses when they go on sale. And then we get out to the extreme. As we head out there, we're probably looking at businesses that are in the tech industry that live or die on creative destruction. Those are much more difficult to figure out for the long run. You know, who's going to win? And then we get clear out here on the other end. And by the way, Buffett is in all of these ranges to one degree or another.
Mm-hmm.
And you get all the way out on the other end and you're in the options world, which is a leveraged place to be. And is, by leveraged, I mean, you get a lot of return per dollar if you win the way most people play options, and you lose. You can lose everything that you put into an investment. So we don't consider options trading to be investing. We don't think investing, and we've talked about this a lot, we don't think investing is anything except buying something you understand for a lot less than it's worth. That's investing. You're going to make money on it in the long run.
I completely agree with that. You might not know how
much, but you will.
Yeah.
And trading is a euphemism for gambling. That's all it is, gambling. So let's get that clear. When we get out here in the options world, you're gambling. Now, I grant you, you can gamble as the gambler or the casino. you have a choice of which one you want to be, but it's still gambling, even for the casino. You were going to say something.
Now I'm debating if casinos actually gamble or if that's an investment that they fully understand. And
I would argue the latter, I think. I don't think the casinos are gambling particularly.
Yeah, I don't think so either. I think they know it's stacked for them.
I mean, we were just talking about an options trade before we started the broadcast today that we're contemplating that will produce, if I decide to do it, it'll produce a 22% return.
Well, it could. That's the point. It could.
No, it will. It's a guaranteed return. I get it up front. They hand me the money.
Yeah.
Up front.
Yeah.
Right?
That doesn't and mean then, you walk away with it.
No, it does. It means you always get that money.
No,
what
I know.
Is your risk? I really like to think about this way because I think it matters.
Okay. Go ahead.
Is that your risk is that you own that business. You're risking the same thing you're risking if you were to buy that business today. That's what you're risking. Actually, you're probably risking substantially less than if you buy that business today because your net position in the business, should you end up buying it, will be less per share than you would pay today, substantially less. So it's a really interesting thing to think about. If you're, and we're not going to get all into all the way I think about it, options right now, but I just want to talk about sort of the extreme side of options trading, which is in the news a lot. with people who are doing meme stocks. So there's okay. there's your all the way out on the edge stuff.
But I just want to like clear out where we are here. So we're talking okay. about Buffett, and what you mentioned a few times is like this bell curve of Buffett's investing strategies, I think.
Yeah.
And one end is the net nets, which we talked about last time. And so now you're saying like this is actually one of Buffett's strategies. On the other end, the more
the
like
strategy I mentioned
speculating
end. It's a speculation, but he's the casino. I would categorize his kind of options trading as being the casino. Mm-hmm. And which would make sense if you're a Buffett fan, you'd be thinking he would want to take that side of the bet, the safer side of the bet, the one that's nearly a sure deal, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's, in other words, the casinos are going to lose from time to time, but your point was in the long run, they don't. The odds are
yeah.
built into the games. And so Buffett does that same thing essentially with these kinds of investments. And that, I mean, the reality is he's one of the largest in terms of sheer dollars, one of the largest options traders in the world. He's made some very major options bets that are on right now in his portfolio.
And where are you seeing that?
Annual reports and his report coming in.
Okay.
I mean, the biggest one that he's done that caught a lot of attention was in the press a few years ago, quite a number of years ago now, but it's still in play, is a very long-term option. I think it was 10 years.
On Bank of America.
You guys can correct me on this. Hmm?
On Bank of America.
No, on the S&P 500.
Oh, on the S&P.
Yeah, he basically created a bet that I guess banks and mortgages took. He created a bet where he would be willing, in the bet, he is obligated to buy the S&P 500 for millions of shares. It's billions of dollars at a set price of, let's say, I don't have the numbers exactly, but let's say it's $10,000 per share.
Hmm.
So he's willing... That's the Dow, excuse me. So let's call it the Dow. It's, you'll get the same idea. I don't know the S&P numbers very well, but so he was willing to buy the Dow Jones Industrial Average at $10,000 a share.
Okay.
And he's willing to do that at the end of a 10-year period. So the people who have the right to force Buffett to buy, let's say, the Dow at $10,000, can't exercise that right until the end of the option contract. Okay?
Got it.
So at the end, if the Dow Jones Industrial Average is below 10,000, they can force Buffett to buy all of those shares at 10,000. So what those people have done is basically bought an insurance policy
mm-hmm.
that amount of their money, that part of their portfolio, cannot lose beyond $10,000 on the Dow, on the Dow.
Mm-hmm.
Anything below that, Buffett's taken that risk. Mm-hmm. So it's an insurance policy, and you shouldn't be surprised because Buffett's an insurance guy, right?
Totally.
Okay. So that's the side of the insured. Just like when you get car insurance or health insurance, you're paying money and somebody's taking on that obligation to cover you. And that's what Buffett has been willing to do. I'm going to cover these investors so that if the S&P 500 is below, or the Dow is below 10,000, then I will buy their position for 10,000 each share. Okay. Something
mm-hmm.
like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then they paid him an amount of money in the billions of dollars for this, to have this right and to obligate him to do that. So they paid this big premium. And Buffett did the calculation that over this long period of time, a 10-year rough period, if he could invest the money that they paid him at 6% per year, he would have the money at the end of 10 years just using the premium, right? Just the premiums they paid him invested at 6% would give him enough money to pay off the bet if he lost.
Well, so, that's classic insurance math, isn't it?
Isn't it? And so Buffett, who makes substantially more historically than that amount of money over the long term, has done something rather fabulous. It's very, very casino-ish. He's been willing to take a bet. He priced it at a certain price, or he was willing to do it at a certain price that he saw conservatively he has no downside risk. So he's the casino. They're taking the gamble. It's not a gamble from their point of view. It's just insurance. Mm-hmm. It's just an insurance policy from their point of view. All right. So this is called a put option. It's a put option. And it is an option where one party is insured at a certain price that they're going to get paid that price if the stock price drops below that price. So if the Dow Jones went to zero, then Buffett would still have to buy it for $10,000 a share. Okay. So somebody's insured.
Yeah.
And that's called a put option. But don't worry about the option language. It's just understand it as an insurance policy. That's one kind of option. But there's another kind of option. And that's the one I wanted to just talk about in reference to this sort of extreme risk side of things. A put option for both parties tends to be a rather business-like transaction.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody's getting insured. They need the insurance. They're willing to pay for it. Somebody is willing to take that obligation. And in Buffett's case, he sees that he really can, like most of the insurance deals he does, he really can pay it off out of the earnings from the premiums.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what Berkshire's been doing for many, many years. So that's a put option. It's good. It's a business deal. And of course, people can always figure out how to make a game out of it. But that's not the one that's out in the news. The one that's out in the news is known as a call option. And it gives someone the right to call, to take your stock away. So if you have obligated yourself on a call option, you've been obligated to sell your stock to somebody at a set price. And then the person that has the right to buy that stock at a set price has paid you for that right.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the classic option. This is what most people think about when they think about an option. So if somebody came to your door and knocked on it and said, "Hi, hey, Danielle, you live on this nice 200 acres here, nice farm. I would like the option to buy that farm from you at a certain price." Now, you've been tracking the price of farmland here, and it's $10,000 an acre in this area, fairly close to Atlanta. And I would like the option to buy this land from you for $15,000 an acre. So you're going to make money, and I'm going to make a risk. I'm going to take a risk. So I'm going to pay you, let's just pick a number here. I'll pay you $500 an acre, or I'll pay you $100 an acre for the right to buy it for 50% higher than the current market price.
And I would say, what's the time frame?
Yeah. And they would say, okay, for the next 3 years, something like that. So it's a very, very good point. Options always have a time frame, just like your insurance policies do. So you would be interested at some amount of money for some period of time, right? If they said, "Hey, I'll give you $1,000 an acre for the next month."
Yeah, yeah.
You might be doing that deal.
Right.
Right? So look at what happened there. Basically, a person came to your door and said, "I would like to have the right to buy your property and I'll pay you for it." And you'd say, "Well, I don't mind being obligated. If the time frame is short enough and the money is big enough,
mm-hmm.
I will be obligated because I think you're very unlikely that you would actually want to buy it, but I'll take your money." Right? That's the option premium. But if you do buy it, I'm going to make a killing. I'm going to go from $10,000 an acre to $15,000 an acre. Now you ask, well, why would somebody do that? Right? Obviously, why the homeowner would do it. You're going to make a bunch of money for no risk and make more money if they buy it. So that's why you might do it. But why would they do it? And the reason they're going to do it is they're gambling that someone's going to build a golf course right through that area, that they're mm-hmm. out collecting the land right now. You don't know about it. It's all super secret, but they know about it. And they're willing to bet a substantial amount of money that that's going to go through. And if they're right, that land at $15,000 an acre that they bought would be worth maybe $100,000 an acre.
Mm-hmm.
And they would make this giant, giant killing, right?
Mm-hmm.
But they've got to do it in the right time frame. And the thing has to happen. So they're taking a risk. Okay. So that's the other extreme from net nets is the risks people take when they're doing call options. They're buying a call option, anticipating the price of this stock is going to go up. Now, what's going on with these meme stocks is that these gamblers.
What are you calling a meme stock?
Okay, a meme stock is one which is has become an idea, a meme, has become an idea in the minds of a lot of speculators, that this idea is kind of on fire, that, oh yeah, this looks really good. I see that a lot of my friends or a lot of the people on this bulletin board or a lot of people in this website are really actively interested in promoting this company as being really badly underpriced and it's going to go up, or that it's on the way up and more people are going to jump in, and we're going to jump in there and speculate that in fact it's the price is going up like a rocket.
So you're saying it's basically a company whose stock is being talked about online a lot. Like people are going back and forth, they're getting excited about it, they're discussing buying it and not buying it and the merits and maybe just the excitement. Through an internet community of some kind.
Right, exactly. Okay. And this has gotten
like we
the
discussed
press.
At great length when the GameStop stuff was happening.
Right. And GameStop was the first really big meme stock. Of course, people point to other things that have happened earlier, but GameStop was gigantic because it's so crazy. So it was just like kind of lunacy that this company was worth anything like what people were willing to bet on. And they turned out to be right and make millions of dollars. And that got everybody's imagination fired up that, oh, maybe Wall Street doesn't know what they're talking about when they say this thing is way overpriced or way over, you know.
I know, and that's what I loved about it. Yeah, it was great. It was like people, frankly, like me, who are going, wait a second, this is actually not the black box of mystery that I have always thought it was. This makes sense. It's a company. I get it. I understand it. I know it. I use their products. I've been buying stuff there since I was 12 years old.
Right.
And they've been going through a downturn and it looks like they might go up. And this makes sense to me. And all these other people think it makes sense. And let's do it. Like,
let's do it. Let's roll the dice here.
And then there was the whole like Wall Street trying to take them down part of it, which just made everybody feel like they were in it fighting the man, which in lots of ways they were.
Oh, they were. Oh, they were indeed.
Yeah,
and that's
absolutely.
That's because these guys had taken what is known as a short position, which we talked about. And these hedge funds had taken a short position because they looked at the company and couldn't see that it could be worth anything remotely like the price being paid for it in the market by people who were big fans of the company.
Mm-hmm.
And the fund managers thought, well, these are just ignoramuses who don't know any better. They're the same people who are buying Tesla, you know, and they're just paying whatever because they just love the company and they don't have any sense of what this thing is actually worth as a business. And they're probably right, the hedge fund managers. They're being very rational.
Wait, but those guys,
right.
The hedge funders short sold it before the Reddit community got into it. It was already
right.
Short.
The company was going to go bankrupt. That's what their view was.
Yeah. And then the whole debacle came about when trading was shut down by several brokerages. Or not trading, selling.
Yeah.
No. Was it buying or was it selling that wasn't allowed?
Oh, you could buy it.
You could buy it. It was selling that wasn't allowed.
You couldn't sell it. which really, really freaked people out and made Robinhood sort of unpopular for a little while.
But so, how is
understand.
What's happening now that is making you think about? Are there more? Because I truly have not been following it since then. So, are there more companies now that people are getting excited about?
Oh, AMC became a big meme stock, and then the silver ETF became a meme stock, and basically, I think it's very difficult for a company to get as much pressure and attention as GameStop did. It was sort of a one off in the sense of how many people got on the back of that thing, and
that was such
how
a perfect storm. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it was, and how joyous they were about crushing this hedge fund.
Yeah.
It was really pretty cool. I hope somebody makes a movie. And so many people made millions and millions of dollars. And I don't know if they've kept it, but GameStop is still up there. I mean, it's at $155 right now while we're talking. And
their thesis was not ridiculous. Their thesis may be correct.
Yeah, the thesis isn't crazy.
There were some people on there with some fundamental research. There genuinely were. I read their posts. And their thesis is that the company had been dealing with classic, like, brick and mortar problems, but they were transitioning into a much more internet focused company, and that they had a new CEO, and this guy had all these ideas for how they were going to transition the company, and the ideas were good ones, and they were like, they're going to do it. I mean, it was not ridiculous, and maybe it'll happen. I hope so. I would kind of feel that it would be like wonderful business versus like little guy versus terrible Wall Street justice.
Well, this is what these options guys do, is they
but how
try
does
to
this relate
something.
To options? That's what I'm trying to.
Well, they essentially what they're doing is buying call options because they're so much cheaper than buying the stock, right? The stock
Wait,
right now
is
$155 a share. A lot of the meme players. So a lot of the people who are promoting the company online are buying options to profit with leverage, to profit, you know, more than just dollar for dollar. As the stock goes up, they get more than dollar for dollar.
Got it.
By doing this leverage options trading. And it has its own impact on the market, right? Because the people they buy the options from are often professional traders, and they don't want to be in a position of risk. They want to be sort of delta neutral in the market where they don't have any risk. And therefore, they are going to be selling stock, or sorry, they're going to be buying stock to offset their position. So let me just give you an example right now. I'm just looking online.
Okay.
Stock's at 155.
And maybe this goes towards the next episode if we...
Well, I think we're just going to cover it here. I mean, this is pretty simple.
Okay.
Unless you got more questions, Danielle, but
questions.
155. And basically, if you said, this is really going to go to 400 over the next year, let's say by January of 2023, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So like 13 months. This is really going to go to 400. You can gamble essentially $35 right now, and you have the right to buy that stock at $300. And then if it goes to 400 over that next year, that will give you a $100 profit, less the $35 that you paid for the option, which means you made $65 on a $35 bet in 1 year. That's 200%. So, you know, as opposed to you pay 155 right now and it goes to 400, you've put in how many times more money? Over four times more money, right? To make a similar kind of return. So you end up with about a quarter of the return that you would have made if you did the option. So options
and
give you a lot of bang
for
the buck.
Tell me the downside.
Well, the downside is that you have to be right, and you have to be right right now. That's the part with options that people don't realize is there's a time factor going on here. You have to be right.
Jeez.
And you have to be right right now, meaning you have to be right within the limits of your options trade. Now, there's some things you can do to keep your money in the game, but it always costs you more and more money. You have to add to it. But essentially, the biggest problem with options, as opposed to just buying the stock, is that you have a time factor. So if you buy the stock for $155, there's no time factor. You sit on this thing for years, and maybe 10 years from now, it's worth $200, and you haven't lost any money. Okay, great. Or maybe it's worth $1,000 a share. But if you buy the option for $35, at the end of next year, it's going to run out. And if they didn't build the golf course, you got to go buy that option again. And so you can end up with a lot of losers with this kind of thing. I mean, moving from 155 to 300 would be huge, right? All by itself, but you don't get any of that. You don't get any of that. So also, in order to not pay a huge amount for the option, you're basically having to move way away from the money. Now, another way to do this is to say, well, I don't know if it's going to go to 400 or 300, but I'd like to buy an option right here, right at the money. And that would cost you roughly $50. So you could buy it for $50 right at the money. And then, which would probably be a lot smarter bet. And now you've got $50 in it. If it goes to 200, then you're making money. If it goes to 300, or you go to 200, you're breaking even. And if it goes to 300, you're making a lot of money. So you just find a price you're willing to pay that makes sense for where you think that stock price is going to go. And you can lay down your bet. And the casino would be happy to take the bet. The casino would. So we do a lot of these kind of options trading. We really have a lot of fun with it because we really like to take the side of the house over and over again. And the people who criticize what I do are options traders that like to make a lot of money fast. They're out to make big home runs. And so they go like, you know, you're like a little chicken pecking up little bits of rice, right? The casino only makes a little tiny money on each bet. So they're like, you're like a little chicken eating little grains of rice. But when things go bad, you get pooped on by elephants. That's... cracks me up.
What?
So anyway, I won't
even
bother
to explain
that. We have
chickens and elephants living together.
I won't even bother to explain that. Chickens and elephants are living together in my mind.
I think that means we need to stop. I think.
We tell our students, be sure to look at the elephant's butt. Watch the elephant's butt. If it starts to pucker, get out of there. I'm giving you guys great lessons on options trading. I'm sure you'll be very successful with what you've just heard.
Oh my goodness. I'm cutting it off. I'm cutting you off.
Oh my God.
We will conclude this next time with some sort of understanding.
It is coming up on Christmas.
Yes, it is.
It's coming up on Christmas. So Merry Christmas, everybody. I hope you guys have a wonderful Christmas and a wonderful New Year's. And we're looking for next year, I think, is going to be very exciting. Things are shaping up to make next year a really amazing year in the economy and therefore in the stock market. And we look forward to helping you guys walk through it and walk through it with us.
Indeed. Okay. Right, thanks, everybody.
Time to go play.
Bye.
See you guys. Bye. Hi, guys. Thanks for listening to Invested. If you enjoyed this episode and you want more information or to listen to additional episodes, visit our website at investedpodcast.com and sign up for my virtual workshop right there. Spots are definitely limited for this event. I'm not kidding. They really are. They sell out very quickly. So everything discussed on this podcast, by the way, is either my opinion or it's Danielle's opinion. And it's really important, it's not to be taken as investing advice because I am not your financial advisor, nor have I considered your personal situation as your fiduciary. So remember that. You're on your own here. This podcast is for your entertainment and education only, and I really hope you enjoyed it.